You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
Welcome to this edition of the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. I'm Grant Bagby. Joining me today is Andy Larson from Salt City Hoops and KSL. You can follow him on Twitter at Andy B. Larson with an E-N. How are you doing today, Andy?
I'm good. Grant, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to the storm coming to Utah, to be honest.
Yeah, no, that's completely understandable. It's a little bit hard to breathe while you're choking on, you know, actual air.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I don't know how much it hits you at home, but, you know, with my wife is actually very sensitive to this stuff, and my son is very sensitive to it. So anytime that the inversion sets in thick, it's not fun at the Bagby household. But I'm sure many of the people listening to this want to get to the Jazz takes, not my family's health.
We care deeply. Give us credit.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. Man, I'm saying a lot too. Sorry, guys. Well, Andy, the Jazz are 7-1 out of their last 8. It seems like the bandwagon is starting to fill up a little bit more and more. How would you rate the Jazz as we stand today?
Yeah, I mean, good, I guess. Give me a rating scale.
I don't know. Let's go 1 to 6.
1 to 6. I think they're, you know, a solid 4. You know, they're not one of the elite teams in the league, certainly. But when you look at kind of where the team was expected to be and the injuries that they've had to face, at the All-Star break, you'd have to say that they're in a decent position. And you kind of look at their spot in the Western Conference, and it's easy to see how they could move up to even the 5 seed with Memphis's injuries and Marc Gasol going down. So, you know, I think the 5 seed, or even maybe even the 6 seed, was beyond most Jazz fans' wildest dreams for this season, or at least their most reasonable dreams for this season. For the Jazz still had to have that as a legitimate possibility is a really good sign and ultimately reflects well on the team.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately with that Gasol injury and the teams ahead of the Jazz right now, I mean, where would you put the odds for the Jazz to get up to that, what I would say, coveted 5 spot?
I mean, there are a lot of teams there, first of all. So, you know, you're competing with 5 different teams for one spot. And so, you know, I wouldn't say that it's likely, but you could kind of look at the resume of each of these teams that they've built over the first half of the season. And Memphis having Gasol go down, he's such a big part of what they do, means that they're probably slide back to the rest of the pack. And Dallas has probably overachieved a little bit, but still has a lot of question marks going into the break. Houston's a nightmare. Portland is probably overplaying, but still maybe doesn't have the talent that the rest of the other teams do. And so you kind of look at the Jazz, who are actually the one of only 5 teams in the Western Conference who have a positive point differential, unlike the rest of those teams I just mentioned there. And kind of statistically, you might look at the Jazz as having the best chance there. Now, that being said, you know, whenever you're competing for one spot with 5 different teams, it's always going to be unlikely. But, you know, I could see like a 20-25% chance that the Jazz get the 5 spot.
That's actually pretty good odds, if you ask me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, if you had been told that when the season began, you would have taken it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and I would have thought you might have something wrong with you had you told me they were going to be a 5 seed. Well, I mean, something that's been really fun as a Jazz fan, which I do claim to be a level of Jazz fan, although the Bulls are definitely my number one team. The Jazz have won some close games as of late, with the exception, you know, last night, New Orleans, but, you know, the overtime win against Dallas, the overtime win against Chicago, just the 2 off the top of my head. What has changed that the Jazz have finally started to win these close games?
I don't know that a lot has actually changed. I mean, I think kind of the shots have gone in at the right time. They've played good defense at the right time. And really, maybe that is the difference, is that instead of having to defend without Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, now they can with those guys healthy and on the court. I mean, to me, so much of the end of games does come down to luck and whether or not you get the ball bouncing your way off the rim or what the referees call or you know, an inch of the ball going out of bounds or not. That I don't put a ton of stock into this idea that the Jazz have all of a sudden become a clutch difference-making team at the end of games, where before they were, you know, scared of the moment or whatever. In the end, it's the same sort of plays that they're running. It's the same sort of players that they have. Again, with the exception of Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, who are probably making a bigger difference on the defensive end in those clutch situations. But overall, I guess you can say maybe they've learned from those situations somewhat. I don't know how much I really truly believe in that. And to say, you know, sometimes they're going to win those games, sometimes they're not. The Jazz lost a lot of those games early in the season and they're kind of regressing to the mean later on in the season by winning some of those games. I know that's kind of boring and mathy, but that's kind of what I believe. And I think what Quinn Snyder believes as well.
Well, Andy, I would never expect something not mathy from you, to be honest.
Well, all right. So even though you're going to chalk a little bit up to luck, I got to ask this question. Then I want to talk about some defense. So who are you going to take at the end of a game situation, Hood or Hayward? That's been one of the debates I've seen throughout social media.
Yeah, I mean, can I just choose whoever the worst defender is on? I mean, that's kind of what the Jazz have done at the end of games. And, I mean, you know, we saw both of those guys succeed against Dallas as they forced switches on them and kind of attacked whoever was guarding the weaker matchup. I think fans, for whatever reason, hate on Gordon Hayward for what he's done in the clutch. But I thought Ben Dowsett's tweet about this after the Dallas game was really interesting, that if you look at just how he shot in the final 10 seconds of a game where the Jazz are trailing or tied by trailing by less than three or tied, he actually has probably the best shooting percentage in the league in those sort of situations, even more than guys like Kevin Durant and Chris Paul and LeBron James. So kind of the criticism there is a little bit unwarranted, and I probably say that it's, you know, I take a cop out here and say that it's probably situational. If depending on who's guarding who, who's open, whoever gets off the screen, you pass it to the open guy and see what they can do. I can kind of consider them shot creation equals at this point.
Yeah, no, I saw that tweet as well, and it was some obscene number. It was a really high field goal percentage, if I remember right. And it was obscene, is all I'm going to say. Part of me when I saw that was, and I retweeted it, but I questioned sample size was part of one of the questions I have. But
definitely.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And no one's saying that Gordon Hayward's a better player than, you know, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, but in the last season, then he's put up numbers and has made those shots when the time's counted. And I guess you can't simultaneously look at those stats and say that Hayward somehow disappointed in the clutch.
No, you're right. You're exactly right. But one thing you did allude to when I was talking about the end game, the close game success, is the return of a Favors-Gobert lineup. Now there's always been concerns about the low post defense or offense side of that lineup, but the defense has just been absurd. What has the return of those two playing at the same time brought to the Jazz, and what has changed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of the return of the defense that we saw at the end of last season, especially when kind of the game's on the line and second half of games, they've been really shutting teams down. I mean, I looked at this a week ago, and it's probably changed since this was before the Dallas and New Orleans game. But at one point, they were allowing only 37 points per second half over this winning streak when the Jazz had won six in a row. And, you know, obviously, whenever you allow that few of points and a half, you've got a pretty good chance of winning that game. I think that's the biggest difference from Quinn Snyder's point of view is what's changed is defense in these kind of close games has been able to make things a lot harder for the opponents. And again, that's credit to Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, their length, their ability to move, kind of their smarts on the defensive end, that, you know, maybe that is the difference between the Jazz and these close games is having their best defenders on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting to me. I remember end of last season, a lot of people were talking about the defense of Dante Exum. And like you just said, it seems like the defense has returned to what it was at the end of last season. Does this kind of take away from some of the, you know, given defensive ability of Exum when he returns?
I don't think so, because it's not all the way back. I mean, you can look, the Jazz had, I think it was a 94 defensive rating after the All-Star break last year. And even since Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert's return, they've been good. They've been second or third in the league good at about 100 defensive rating, but they're not all the way down to that 94 really elite stopping teams on a historical sort of level that they were at the end of last year. So, you know, as good as the defense has been since those guys have returned, it still has a way to go to be what it was at the end of last season with Dante Exum.
But it, you know, you make me think of another question, and I doubt you impress me if you had this off the top of your head. But what guard lineup is producing a better defense? Do you know if it's the Neto lineup or is it the three wing type lineup?
I believe it's the Neto lineup, but I'm honestly not sure. I know that the Trey Burke scenarios have been very ugly from a defensive point of view, but I don't think I've looked at those numbers, at least enough to know it off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't expect you to, and I there's a reason I didn't even include a Burke lineup as a part of the question. I'm pretty confident in those defensive numbers. No offense to Burke. I know he's actually had a decent season, in my opinion. You've given the Jazz a 20% chance of getting to the 50. What would you say are the chances that the Jazz make a move before the trade deadline?
I've been asked this a lot, and I think it's a really good question. I've put out the number 65% out there, and, you know, that's completely arbitrary, and it's kind of perfectly designed to not get me in trouble if the Jazz don't make a trade, right? But there are enough situations that the Jazz have and opportunities that I think ultimately it's likely that the Jazz make a move. To kind of name some of those situations, Trey Burke has had kind of declining playing time even before he was legitimately sick. And wasn't able to go on this last road trip. But the Jazz are still a much better team when he's not playing very many minutes. I believe when he doesn't play, he plays 20 minutes or fewer this season. I think the Jazz are 14-6, if I remember correctly, which is, you know, a massive improvement over 500. And you can kind of see Quinn's, I guess, faith in Trey Burke's ability to improve is decreasing. His parents, as we all know, are very unhappy about his current situation. And ultimately, with how well he shot earlier in the season, this may be the right time to move him for something of value. I also think that the Jazz probably look at how many minutes Chris Johnson is getting right now, playing 20 minutes a night, and probably see that as an opportunity to get an easy upgrade where, you know, you get a legitimate NBA rotation player in there and probably help your team out a lot, compared to, you know, relative D-League replacement level player in Chris Johnson. What else? Trevor Booker, for example, is a unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. It may make sense to trade him for value if some team is willing to give it up. The Jazz have some cap space that they can acquire something into, and they're one of three teams with any real cap space right now. They may get a second round pick in order to take on a contract, say. So, you kind of add up all those different scenarios, and you know, ultimately, I come up with the idea that it's likely that the Jazz make a move.
Do you want to make any outlandish trade machine type predictions based on that?
It's hard because kind of the kinds of moves I described are not the crazy outlandish ones. I mean, I just reported on Twitter that the Jazz are interested in kind of getting a bridge point guard for this season and next, while Dante Exum is out this season and then is kind of still recovering, bouncing back from that ACL injury, and really just kind of getting better as a point guard. in his second year on the court, so that the Jazz would be interested in getting a bridge point guard who's got a 2-year deal, basically. And so there are a number of different scenarios there. I mean, Jeff Teague is the one that's been reported widely. His bidding may honestly be too rich for the Jazz's blood at this point. I mean, you look at apparently Orlando's willing to offer Victor Oladipo as part of that deal. That probably an offer that the Jazz can't beat. And if Indiana offers George Hill, kind of the same thing. Both of those players are probably have more value than Alec Burks does. So, you know, that may not be realistic. So you kind of look down the list of what are these other point guards who have 2 years remaining on their contract. Jrue Holiday, is he available? Darren Collison, is he available? C.J. Watson, is he available? Ty Lawson is almost certainly available, but are you willing to acquire him and take on the off-the-court stuff? I mean, there are actually a ton of different point guards who are available. Even on Atlanta, Shelvin Mack is another name. He's playing third point guard in Atlanta right now, and maybe they'd be willing to trade him if they don't trade Teague or Schroeder for another point guard. So, I mean, there are a lot of different scenarios there, and that's kind of what the Jazz are trying to sort through as the deadline comes through.
All right, well,
I know that was a lot to say at once, but.
No, well, you know, as you are giving out point guard names, I was shaking my head either yes or no on whether I think the Jazz could get them. And unfortunately, there's a lot of no's in my opinion.
Okay.
A lot of players that you listed, I just don't know that the Jazz are willing to put it out to get them. But you did bring up something that I've seen argued on social media. Is, you know, as Alec Burks continues to recoup from his injury, we've seen this continued resurgence or emergence of Rodney Hood. And how much has Rodney Hood's play devalued the Jazz's need to have Alec Burks?
I think quite a bit. Part of the problem is, right, you need a third and fourth wing. I think we're seeing the consequences of not having any bench wings right now, where, you know, last night the Jazz's bench scored 9 points. That's just not going to get it done against any opposition. And so it'll be nice to have Alec Burks when he comes back, you know, assuming he's not traded. But that being said, you're absolutely right that he may be less valuable to the Jazz than he would be to another team. And, you know, that's where trade opportunities come from. If the Jazz could get something, again, that fits into their core long term, would be a nice wing player, could defend and shoot probably better than Alec Burks can. I think they probably need less of his slashing ability than they need someone who can spot up and shoot well and defend well kind of long term. But you look at Alec Burks' contract and how long it lasts, and that's really appealing to teams right now in the league, given how much the cap has gone up. I mean, from what I hear, Jazz are getting a significant amount of calls on Alec Burks because of that contract moving forward. It is actually the longest contract the Jazz have.
All right. Well, Andy, I appreciate you coming on. Always some great Jazz insight. If you don't follow Andy on Twitter, go do it. It's at Andy B. Larson. And always can read his stuff on KSL and over at Salt City Hoops. He's put together a great staff of writers, including one of my favorites, Dan Clayton. So, Andy, thanks for coming on, and we will catch up with you again later in the season.
Sounds good. Hey, thanks, Grant.
This has been a Torn Life Sports production.